AdYak.
You're listening to AdYak. AdYak is the official podcast of the AAF Greater Lehigh Valley Ad Club. Our mission is to inspire creativity and enhance the professional development of the advertising and marketing communities where we live and work. I'm your host, Bill Childs, and I'll talk with artists, designers, writers, directors, photographers, along with those who work in a creative capacity. Our aim here is to serve as a creative resource to help you stay informed, entertained, and above all, inspired. But first, I want to thank ASR Media. We appreciate your support and collaboration. Welcome back to AdYak, the podcast where we explore the messy, magical, and wildly misunderstood world of creativity with people bold enough to actually live it. Today, I sit down with Abriella Milazzo. She's a yoga instructor, a holistic educator, an artist, and an author of two books whose work exists at the crossroads of movement, mindfulness, and imagination. Here's the thing about Abriella. She doesn't just practice creativity. She embodies it. The way she teaches, the way she writes, the way she simply walks through the world. It all comes from a place of wonder. For her, creativity isn't a switch. It's the foundation she's built her life on. In this conversation, we get into why creativity is so misunderstood. What it looks like to reclaim creativity as a raw human instinct, not just a polished professional skill. How Abriella keeps her creative flow alive when life is messy, uncertain, or lacking inspiration. And yes, we even detoured into Jonathan Livingston Seagull, that strange little 70s book that affected me in a completely unexpected way. At its heart, this episode is about remembering. Remembering the creative pulse that lives inside every one of us. If you've ever thought creativity was something you lost, missed, or didn't have permission to claim, this one's for you. Because the truth is, creativity isn't something you find. It's something you finally decide to live. Here is my AdYak with Abriella Milazzo.
So I think I was thinking about that first time we met. I think that was a very interesting interaction for me, because we were at a book signing, and we had a book. You had a book there. I had a book there. You had your pet. It was called My Pet Bug. I was doing Child's Play, and I remember, like, you looked over at me, and you, I think you had my book in your hand, and you were flipping through it, and you were like kind of, and you had this like kind of like devilish grin on your face, almost like you were like, oh, I'm going to talk to you. Like, I want to talk to you. I know you, but I want to talk to you. And we ended up having a conversation, and it was pretty effortless and had a nice flow. And it centered around creativity, which I liked. And then obviously I found out, you know, everything that you were kind of doing. So let's start there. What would you say is your relationship with creativity?
Creativity is one of my best friends. Sometimes, well, just kind of like in this conversation that you're saying when we met, right? Like, it becomes effortless. And I just find that creativity in my life, before I knew what creativity was, I was already doing it, right? And then because it's natural and it's effortless. And then maybe sometimes you get lost along the way because life happens. And so it's like catching up with an old friend. You come back and then you just recognize the difference in the flow of how creativity feels versus not.
Right. But it's also very misunderstood by a lot of people, right? Like it's not like... It's a power we all have, we all possess. I agree. Like, not all of us are using it. Not all of us are using it to the level that it can be used, right? And I've in business, and a lot of the businesses that I worked with and the managers that I worked with just didn't get it. They made no attempt to get it either. What bothered me. So how do you with those people when you come upon them in your travels? People are just like shut down and just are like, nope, not having it.
Yeah. Well, I think I teach yoga, right? So you know this. And for those that are listening, like, I teach yoga and I've been doing yoga for a long time. So I bring that into this thread because I hear it was yoga, right? Hey, would you like to try yoga? No, I can't. Right. And it's a constant shutdown. I'm not flexible enough. I can't do this. I can't do that. It's an instant, you know, and you get to a point when you hear so many no's that you're like, okay, well, I can't convince you, but my door will always be open for you. Will always be open, right? Mm-hmm. But it's not your time right now. And I think, like, when I meet those people that don't necessarily understand creativity in the really beautiful, full, overflowing sense that it is.
Right.
My goal is to just drop a little seed or, you know, like enlighten something in our everyday that is just so absolutely incredibly mind-blowing beautiful. You know, like, what is it? Like, take a deep breath in. And that alone can be the gift.
Sure. Sure. My daughter actually introduced me to yoga about 5 years ago. And it was hot yoga. So it was the kind where you get in a room where they heat it up to like 150.
Yeah.
Perfect for guys like me. So I can kind of get more into the stretch. I can kind of, you know, mm-hmm. I can get a lot, right? And yeah. After that first class, I was like, where was this all my life? Like, I felt like almost like, wow, like that was really cool. Like, I really enjoyed that. And I couldn't do the, you know, like you're talking about some of the intense poses, but like the instructor said, we're all on a different journey.
Yeah.
You know, some are.
Yeah. I actually don't even teach it like that.
Yeah.
I don't even like to teach with. Mm-hmm. All of that, like, that's one of the first things I often say in a class is like, you know, yoga's not about twisting into a pretzel.
Right.
I know that so many of us have been taught that way, but it's really not. It's the presence and allowing, you know, yoga is union and it's our oneness in the world, right? How can we find our oneness? And I feel like that oneness and creativity come hand in hand. They meet in the middle, right? You have to be present in the moment to recognize where the beauty is, right? There's this unfolding that's happening. And if you stopped, if you don't allow yourself to reach into it, you know, the coming back to what you were kind of talking about a couple minutes ago is when it comes to creativity, I think so many people aren't utilizing it because their self-talk is already saying you don't have it.
Mm.
And you know, the self-talk is you are it. And it's about developing the relationship that you have with it. And I think another little part to that is also if your self-talk is already doubting you, the door's closed. Now, if the door cracks open and you take a step through, and you're uncomfortable with the process
right.
of being uncomfortable and not knowing and turning away,
mm-hmm.
Creativity's still waiting over there, but you have to get over there. So I think that's kind of where that difference is. You have to be brave. You have to be brave to be creative, and you have to be willing to open up to whatever unfolds.
Well, I think this is interesting. I think that, and again, I'm not a yogi, so you'll have to kind of fill me in on this, but I feel like both yoga and creativity are a source energy. It's a connection to a source,
mm-hmm.
right? Like you're
absolutely.
You're kind mm-hmm. of pausing, right? You can talk probably more about that, obviously, than I can. But like, even with creativity, it feels sometimes it's a tapping in. It's kind of like a
absolutely
allowing the creativity to show up. It's not yes, it's mm-hmm. but it's almost like creating the space to invite it in. And that's only something I kind of like really understood.
You just gave me goosebumps.
I understood. Like, seriously, like this is not like this is new knowledge for me. I hadn't made those connections before.
Mm-hmm.
But this podcast and talking to people and the students and seeing the students in my classroom and what they go through with their creative and their
creativity,
this stuff is like it's like revealing itself to me now, you know? But it's like I do remember when I worked at an agency, if I had to come up with a big idea and nothing was coming, I knew that I would talked about this before. I would just set my room up. I would turn the lights off. I'd light a couple candles, mm-hmm. incense, and then I'd put my feet up on my desk. I don't know why that helped, but putting my, mm-hmm. my desk, maybe some like...
Because now you're in charge.
Maybe. I don't know. Or just it's like a...
You're ushering it in.
Yoga pose.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then I would just wait. I wouldn't be like, okay, where's the ideas? I got a deadline in 5 minutes. I would allow the creativity to show up to me. And then I would just be the vessel to write it down. So anyway, I went longer than what I wanted to there. But right, I think they're both things that allows us to connect back to the source, a source of energy.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, just to like, you gave me goosebumps with that, because I think that is so dead on. And from teacher to teacher, right? Mm-hmm. What you just said was like a mirror of my own experience of, I've been teaching for years. I've taught, you know, I teach lots of different groups of people, right? Maybe it's seniors, maybe it's children, maybe it's families, maybe it's in a classroom, maybe it's on a farm, you know, all different places, on a mountain, like that. But recently I just started the school year. It's a preschool, and it's Reggio Emilia, which is a philosophy-based school in Italy, right? So Reggio Emilia is a city, and their schools they started something new, right?
Right.
Back, I believe it was at the end of World War II. Now, I wanted to share this because I've been teaching art I would say creativity. I don't really necessarily teach art itself. I teach the art of creativity. Mm-hmm. And just about a month ago, I started this position in this preschool with this type of philosophy, which is child-led.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm used to having 20 kids or so in my classroom. You know, 1, 2, 3 years old, you can imagine little monkeys running around, right? And you want to find order. They make messes, they spill things, they do all sorts of stuff. And it's just so profound and interesting, because when I finally, the first day when they came in, the one-year-olds, I knew my job was to just stand back and let everything happen. And the thing that I set up, they weren't that fond of. I thought they would love it. It was painting with fruit, right? So I thought they would love that all over their hands and face. No, they didn't want that. They wanted to be in the classroom. And all of a sudden, it was like 10 thing one, thing twos running around, taking beads, throwing them into jars, taking flower petals off the shelf and throwing them on the table. And it became this disaster. And the other teacher looked at me and she wanted to clean. I said, don't do it. Put your hands back. Let's just watch it unfold. Mm. And so it reminded me exactly what you're saying, is like, that was such a profound moment for me, and understanding that when we control too much, we stop the one thing that we're searching for, right? In the me letting go is the unfolding, you kicking up your legs. That's you relaxing and just saying, all right,
yeah,
here I am.
I'm ready to receive.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The picture, if you would have seen that picture of my classroom, you'd be like, I can't even believe it got that way. And I'm like, I would like to frame it, because it's a perfect reminder in the beauty of letting go, how much you discover, even when the messes are happening, just don't control so much. Let it be.
Why do you do that, though? Why do you think, I mean, obviously I'm not asking you to answer for the entire human race, but why do we resist letting go so much? What do you think? What is that? Like, what, it seems to be like it's prevalent. Like right?
Yeah. I think a lot of it starts with childhood. I think a lot of it starts with childhood. I mean, even being in a classroom of preschoolers, right? These humans are learning how to speak and move their bodies and interact and have emotions,
right?
And this is when it's all happening. This is when they're so free. And we all know this, right? You look at a 3-year-old, you're like, wow, look at them, you know, so wild and free. And I think it starts there, like in recognizing, I recognize the importance of how I use my words and how I set up the stage for them to understand and learn right now. Because if I'm going around saying no, 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 that may carry with them. And I think that's where a lot of it is like, we have such a hard time letting go because of the ancestral traumas of having to be safe, right? Like a war is going on, or inflation is happening, or, you know, we're having global climate crises where homes are being destroyed. And so our safety, our root chakra is always being shaken. And that's next to the creativity chakra, which is our sacral, right? And so I think a lot of it stems from there. And then it becomes, we become creatures of habit, right? The older we get, the more people maybe rub us the wrong way. We get a little bit more closed off. And then it just becomes a layer of skin that you don't even realize you have because you've been wearing it for so long.
Yep. Yeah. It's almost, this is an oversimplification, but it's almost like we kids start out as these beautiful little geniuses, right? And then as they start, it's almost like they're kind of like beaten into conformity a little bit. Like, in other words, like, don't do that.
Put a lot of bit.
Don't jump in the puddle. Get your feet. Yeah. All the stuff. Don't play in the snow. You're going to get wet. Put your clothes up. Like, all the stuff that, like, we're told. And then you're right. I think that over the years, it just kind of wears on you. And then you kind of get back. You started out as this, like, beautiful, amazing genius. Now you're just back in the box. Then, of course, you have school.
Yeah.
It's like middle school does not, you know, help bring the best.
Nurture creativity.
Doesn't nurture creativity. Yeah. And in fact, it starts to kind of like educate it out of you. And then, you know, then with like, what do you know, maybe if you're lucky, by the time you get to college, you're ready to like let that back out again. I think the people that are the ones that are that kind of stay in touch with their creativity all the way through those periods are the ones that can tap into it the most. You know what I mean? That are comfortable.
I think also support around them too. Because like I know personally, I've always been an artist, but just like you were saying, I felt like it wasn't respected for me to be an artist in my family. I needed to use my mind more. I ended up going to college and becoming a science major. And honestly, really, I was always so focused in school on like, okay, I'm going to take this extra language now so I don't have to do it later on, right? I'm going to take this AP class to try to get college credits instead of taking ceramics, which is what I really want. Because again, it was that control, right? Like, I want to try to control my future by doing this ahead of time. And then I miss out on all of the years that I could have been playing in between. And then all of a sudden you get this wake up call and you're like, whoa, I need more play. I need more play.
Yeah.
And play is creativity, right? It's allowing, again, it comes back to the making the messes. When I watch the kids spill and do this, it's like, it makes me smile, really. It makes me smile because I'm like, all right, what's going to happen next? You know, and then you get comfortable in that. What happened next? And then that's when I think you start to dial in more. When you stop trying to have to know, it goes hand in hand with faith, I believe. It's hand in hand. You have to just trust that you're okay and it will unfold.
I think a lot of us get told, when we're looking at the staircase, if our life is a, you know, for as a metaphor for a staircase, I think our family and everybody, they mean well, and they want us to know, how are you getting up those steps? And you're like, you don't need to see every single step to get to the top.
Yeah. And the more people ask you, you're confused.
Right. You just need to see the step that's in front of you. Take that.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, the next step, and then the next step. We get hung up on, we have to see the whole staircase. I'm going to go to college.
Walk
out. I'm going to get married. I'm going to do this. I'm going to have a house. I need to do like, we get all like, we get all caked up. You know what I mean? Like mud just covered up and we can't shine, you know?
Yeah.
Trying too.
That's a great way to put it. That is. It feels like that. You're right. It's like the shine's gone. The mud is trapped in the shine, and you have to like crack it open. And cracking is not comfortable. It's not comfortable, but you can make it become comfortable if you know that each time you crack, you break something open and it's easier to shine.
Well, some of those yoga poses aren't easy either.
No, no. And I think that's where a lot of it is. Yoga has just always been part of me. And honestly, stretching has always been a part of me. I love stretching. I've always loved to stretch.
Yeah.
But later on, you know, I stepped onto a yoga mat just because I was drawn to it. But I was also going through a really traumatic time in my life. And I needed a container to unravel in. And, you know, with yoga and those poses, a lot of what is missing that people from the outside are not experiencing it see, and I think makes them fear or shine or turn away from it, is that it doesn't happen in one day. It's a molding. It's a practice, and it gets messy. Right? Society has really tried to instill it in us that messy is ugly and not beautiful. And again, it's in the mess, right? How do you make pasta homemade? Can you make pasta homemade without making a mess? You know, you cook something in the kitchen, you make a mess. It's not that you're not going to clean, and the responsibility is cleaning it up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that same thing with the yoga practice or in creativity. Again, it's a carving. If you only step in one time and you're like, oh, no, not for me, and you leave, you're not going to get better at it, right? But if you show up and you don't care in whatever form you're in and you just allow yourself to unravel and be for a little bit, something's going to come up. And then you keep showing up to that because you know that that's the gift. Being uncomfortable and being okay with being uncomfortable.
Sit right there.
It's the gift, right? It's bravery. That's bravery in action.
I had a student, the year just started. So we started, I had them do these personality boards in class where they just show me your personality. Just draw what you like.
Cool.
Just kind of an example that just kind of, no structure, no, you know, it's just like,
yeah,
word. You can either do collage, you can print things out from the internet, just whatever you want to do. And this one student comes up to me and says, I need a new board. I said, why? And she said, this one's messy. I'm like, what are you talking about? And she turns it around and it has this beautiful drawing of a fox on it. But she's using pastels, right? So there's little smudges here and there. And I'm like,
yeah,
what are you talking about? This is amazing. No. You got to finish this. And I could see it right there in that moment. It she couldn't see how good it looked. It wasn't even, it was only half finished. I saw it already that this is somebody that has some talent. She was focused on the smudges. I said, you need to finish this. Take this back. If you, once you finish this, if you still feel like you need a new board, I'll give you a new board. So what it made me realize is like, it's not the end result. It's the process of getting to the end result.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah, because you don't know what the end is.
She finished it.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And everybody that sees it compliments it. Like everybody's like, ooh, who loves that? And I'm like, I'm getting with and internalizing this because she wanted to just walk away from it. She was looking for the whole staircase. She wasn't looking at that first step, which was keep going.
Yeah.
It's just funny because the things that we learn in school, I've learned, are a lot of it turns out to be like well-intentioned advice, but wrong.
Yeah.
Like we were not taught in school to be comfortable with failure. Nobody wants to fail. Nobody wants to like make a mistake, but yet exactly what you need in order to succeed. Wish I would have known that years ago. Right? I think I would have.
Yeah. Well, but see, you wouldn't be the person, even though, because I have moments like that too, and we all do. But it's like, if we had known it earlier, then we don't get to carry on with the lessons that we've learned from it. Right? It's like you saying that with a suit. Someone asked me recently, like, you know, how do you know when it's finished? And I guess I never really thought about it in that sense, because again, it's just something that I've just, you just do, right? You just do. And so I did sit with it a little bit when they asked me that. Like, I was like, okay, let me think about this for a moment. And I think the answer is you never know when it's going to be finished, because it's a feeling. You look at it and all of a sudden you're like, okay, it's done, you know? And that's where that relationship and the molding and the fun and the muses, right? It's like an orchestra that's playing. And, you know, you don't want to stop at 30 seconds. You don't want to, you know, you want someone to have a solo in it, right? You want to add these elements to it. And so I think that that's kind of that mirror effect with what you're saying school taught us was like, oh, hey, the way is over here. Well, no. Everyone has their own way. And the only way that you're going to know it is if you tune in and you feel the difference in the process. And like, you can go for, I had a friend growing up, we would make shirts when we go to a concert. Instead of buying band t-shirts, we would make shirts.
Okay.
And it was a very different experience for both of us, because she always in the middle would make a smudge and be like, oh, now it's all messed up. And he wouldn't want to finish it. You know, she's like, okay. And I'm like, well, keep going. Like, smudge it a little bit more. Add this or add that, right? And that's where the fun is. Like, okay, you smudge it, but can you cover it up? Can you, maybe that smudge is intent. Maybe the universe was gifting you with that smudge. Because in that smudge, all of a sudden, you're like, wow, that smudge looks like a flower. Now I want to do a flower, right? Mm-hmm. So you keep going with it and keep playing with it until you're satisfied with what it looks like in front of you.
So do you think kind of like you chose your career, or your career chose you? Do you think like it was like, because I know a little bit of your origin story with, you know, watching that Alan Watts video. Alan Watts video, mm-hmm. Which I love that story, because I live for those moments when I hear people, they see something, they see a performance, you know, you hear mm-hmm. people that like saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan and the next day started a band and are still like playing, you know, and become, you know.
Yeah.
So like that Alan Watts video, like really did that to you. Like, right. It connected. So in other words, I feel like that was in there already. That was in there. He just was kind of like
150%.
Right? That just kind of
like
gave you permission to let it out, is what I'm getting at.
Absolutely. I think it was, I was born this way. Right? What is that? Lady Gaga? I was born this way. I know for a fact that I was, because, you know, I had a craft box from the earliest age I can possibly remember. And I would just make things, right? I grew up an only child, and I entertained myself by creating things and making things. I'm a 90s baby, right? That's also what we did in our free time. I definitely think that Alan Watts moment, when I watched that video, If Money Were No Object, I think that was that moment, kind of like I was saying earlier, is you always have it and you know it's there, but then you get so hardened and you forget. And so then school happened, right? And I was so focused on making it through school alive, right? Don't we all? Yeah. We're trying to make it through that. And I'm like, okay, well, then I can go to college. Then I can pack up everything I own and drive into my, you know, all of these bigger dreams that I have. I knew I had to focus and get them done. And it was in that moment, that video, like you said, it was the invitation of like, hey, wait, is this how the reality has to be? Or is there another way? Mm-hmm. And then writing came back into my life, right? It was something that writing was my first love. Mm. And it grounded me. And it was my friend. The notebooks, the smell of them are like, you know.
I feel that way in bookstores.
Yeah. We know a book. Absolutely.
We know that newsprint, yeah, and all that knowledge. I get that. Mm-hmm. Now, what?
Yeah, it's hard not to.
Right. Your second book was, tell me about the second book that you wrote, because that one's about yoga, right? Or is it a, yeah. Tell me about the second book. First book was My Pet Bug, right?
Yes.
Children's book. Mm-hmm. And then you just published one now, or recently.
Mm-hmm.
About, talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So two completely different books, right? And the children's one was something that I had already written when I was in Montessori training, and it unfolded because I started to illustrate it. And I had this dream when I was really young that one day I would write a book. So I did My Pet Bug, but something was still knocking and I needed to get something else out. And at the time I was teaching, you know, all these yoga classes, and I kept finding this common thread. And that was, I didn't have the time to share the true wisdom of what yoga really is. Mm-hmm. Not the facade of, hey, here you are in your Lululemon pants on your yoga mat, sweating, doing stretches with a really serious face. Everyone's quiet. You know, it's about, it's a way of being. It's not just when you step on the mat. It's how you move through your life. And so that's really where it came. I kept recognizing this common thread in the stories that I wanted to share, but not having the space to do it. So Enjoy the Breeze came, it started as a 7-day challenge and it turned into a month. But for 1 month, I just talked about the 8 limbs of yoga, which is essentially what the book is about. It's a beginner's guide to yoga with the scope of the 8 limbs, which most people are not taught. We're just, in the Western world, you know, it's emphasized that asana, which is the physical practice.
Right.
Asana is yoga. So most people are like, oh, I can't do it. And it hurt my heart so much because I'm like, yes, you can do it. Yoga is so much more.
Yeah.
And so that's why it just poured out of me for a month of just writing about the 8 limbs, which is sensory deprivation and breath control and like being able to tune inward and recognize what's happening here to dull the chaos that's happening outside.
I'll tell you what.
I wanted to do it in the easy way.
I'm seeing so much of a connection right now. And I didn't realize when I started, we started talking, but the connection between yoga and creativity, right? Is yoga inward creativity. If you really want to tap into it, get back in touch with your inner child. You got to look inward. There's some really, you know, interesting things. Constraints also brings out creativity. And in yoga,
absolutely,
there's some constraints that are happening there. There's a quieting of the mind, you know, trying to quiet down, being more intentional, you know, being still, right? In order to calm boys. Boy, there's some really interesting connection.
Mm-hmm.
And
now you see why I screen yoga from the rooftops. Do more yoga.
I got to get back to mine. I missed the stretching. Even though just the fact that getting in the room and getting in some of those poses, like I felt better when I was done. I always did. I always felt
better
the yoga session.
Absolutely. Well, and it's so much more than that too. It's like yoga can be you going and walking in nature and without headphones in your ears or not connected to your Bluetooth. You're out there and you hear the birds singing. You can feel the breeze on your cheeks. This is stuff that I kind of share in my book, right? It's come on this journey with me because you're already doing it. You just don't know you are yet. And I'm going to tell you right now that you are. And we're going to do it together each time you turn the page. We're going to breathe a little bit more. We're going to tune back in one breath at a time, one step at a time, right? We're not trying to get all, you don't have to, I'm not asking you to get up, as you would say, right? Yeah. I'm not asking you to get up to the top of the staircase. I'm just saying, trust me, I'll help you get to the next step and we'll go from there. we'll have fun doing it.
Yeah. I love that.
You know, so it's like more fun that you have in your life. It's, you know, like right before we talked, I went out to go swimming in the pool, right? I set a timer for 10 minutes. Of course, I accidentally didn't set the timer the correct time I thought. So it was 30 minutes. And I'm like, wow, this is taking a long time. And it was 15, right?
Mm.
Time flies by when you're having fun. 15 minutes go by and I finally get out. And I'm like, wow. Now I share this because I was also working while I was swimming. What do you mean? How are you working? Well, I have a yoga, an aqua yoga class I'm going to teach on Saturday. So here I am in the pool practicing. How can I implement what I already know about yoga to share this with others? How can I tune into my breath? How can I tune into my body? How does my body feel when I'm floating in this water? Mm-hmm. I'm also having fun because I'm a mermaid and I love being in the water. So it's like, how can we fun in our everyday life? How can we infuse more fun? Maybe it's when you're brushing your teeth, you put on your favorite song and you dance while you're brushing your teeth. And now when you're done brushing your teeth, it doesn't feel like a regular boring day. You're all jazzed up and you're ready to take on the world.
You know, so many of us, and I used to live this way. I used to kind of like, I would just, I don't know. I was miserable all the time. I would get up as you're describing, I'd be, you know, brushing your teeth or like combing your hair or like driving to work. All those things were so mundane that they just, you know, you kind of get into a rut, right? I talk about this in Child's Play, where like, if you can kind of get yourself out of that rut, like what you're just talking about, like take a different way to work, you know, get on, what's it, again, what's another yoga thing where they say set your intention, right? Isn't that like set your intention, set your intention for the day. What kind of day do you want to have? That should be, you should be thinking about that before you get out of bed and before your feet hit the
floor. Absolutely.
And the floor is like, what day do I want to have? And I hope you're not looking up saying, I want to do a crappy day today. I want to really have a crappy day. I want everything to go wrong and I want to get really angry. I hope that's not how like.
Well, we do know if someone is saying that, that's how it's going to unfold. No surprises.
I know this now. Yeah. So. Again,
I feel like
in school, I feel like there's a couple classes that are missing from the curriculum. Okay.
A couple?
I'm just going to stick with a couple. I think there should be a class on creativity to teach how to bring people back to it. I think mindfulness and yoga should be a class.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want to talk about, like, you know, you have so many mental health issues out there that could be kind of like, maybe a little bit more controlled if they were kind of, if we were all given the tools on how to process a lot of that stuff.
100%.
From a younger age, right? So from like elementary school, teach it there.
Preschool. I mean, I start with preschoolers. Preschoolers, they already get it.
Yeah. And I feel like, you know, even with creativity, like it just, it gets misunderstood. And it's, you know, why I think a lot of people resist it too, and maybe why they resist yoga, is it's seen as frivolous. It's not seen as serious, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you're going to yoga.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay. Yeah.
What does that look like? You mean you just sitting around with everybody else, like you said, in your yoga pants, pretending, you know, with your arm, you know, you're in your...
Yeah.
Again, presentation. It's not what it is. Actually, I did yoga to the point where like, it was like the sweat would collect in my ears. That's how much you sweat.
Yep.
I never knew a human body could sweat that much. And it was glorious. I came out of those sets with my daughter and I was like a mess. Like I looked like I went through a shower of sweat and it was great. Walk outside.
Yeah.
Oh, the pores are open. Boy, the air just kind of braces you up. Felt amazing.
Yeah.
I'm talking about it. I got to get back to it. I got to really,
it's so funny because you just full circled this whole thing again, that mess, that sweat was worth it. It's worth it. And time again, it's always worth it. I always tell the individuals that show up in the class, wherever they are, right? When we show up, then I say, thank you. I know that the hardest part is walking through the doors.
100%.
But I hope deep down in your heart that every time you leave, it's always worth it. That's one thing. I do some wild things for a yoga class. I've woken up at 3:30 in the morning to wake up to go do a 5 o'clock yoga class. I've cut my vacation early so I could go and teach 2 yoga classes on the farm when the sun is rising. Why? Because I know it's always worth it. It's always worth it. I always feel better. So I would rather do that hard work and maybe feel a little uncomfortable or a little tired, but that's okay, because then I go and do that. And then I am so fueled and I am like, wow, this is the best day. I got to see the sunrise. You know, I got to interact with people, got to hang out with some goats, whatever it may be. Right. But that's where it is. It's like, it's such a, it really is a mindset thing. Like you said, everyone is creative and you just have to turn the self-talk into, I am creative. What do I want to create?
Well, and as you're talking, I'm remembering, what stops a lot of people too from doing yoga, from being more creative, is we get so conditioned to kind of like have to be good immediately. Like, if I can't go into a yoga studio and stand on my head with no arms and, you know, just stand on my head for like 5 minutes, why am I in here? Right? No.
Yep.
Not the case at all. You know?
No, because you're not doing any of the work. You're like, you're literally wanting the trophy before you even sweat or practice to try to win it. You know, and then you get a lot of projections of like, oh, well, you're so lucky, or, oh, you know, like you're lucky, or you're just good at it, or just naturally. And it's like, well, no, it's the dedication to the practice. Yeah. It's the showing up, just like a writer. That has been one of the biggest things. And I think that's where the lines in my own life is. And we've touched on, like you and I have touched on this before, this book that I've been writing for about 10 years now, but it's really been in the making my whole life. And I've been dropping seeds for myself along the way through my writing. Now, if I gave up and I was like, oh, you know, no, it's not really important, like I wouldn't have been able to look back on those different seeds and see them. Yeah. And that's where I think the beauty is. That's where that messy process is. Sometimes there's highs, sometimes there's lows. But ultimately, if you keep your eye on the prize, and the prize is happiness versus $50,000 or pride, that's not much, but like, I know you know what I'm saying, right? Like the prize is, oh, I want my dream car, or the prize is, I want more ease in my life. What is the goal that you're focused on? What is the purpose? Is the purpose for your own needs, or is it for the collective? And then you keep showing up for that, because it doesn't feel like a drag. It feels empowering because it makes you feel more alive.
Well, we get happiness wrong too. Do you know why?
Mm-hmm.
Because we put happiness, what we were talking about, it's like, well, I'll be happy when, right? When I get the car, when I get, when I get the house. Doesn't work like that. You got to be happy now with what you have.
Yeah.
Be grateful for what you have now. And then more happiness will follow you. You'll attract it.
Yeah.
Again.
Do you see how yoga connects again?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why the presence is the present, right? It is, because it's in those where you're able to pick up on the signs. You're able to see. I mean, you think when you were talking just a few minutes ago about driving in your car, right? Like you're like, oh, just driving from like point A to point B. But if in that drive, instead of your eyes being so heavy and you're stressed out about what you have to do later, your head is up and you see a hawk swoop down in front of you, right? And you saw because you were awake, because your eyes were open and they saw, and maybe that swooping down was the sign that you needed to be reminded, hey, there's something else going on, or I needed that, right? You stop to sit on a bench. It's all of a sudden, as soon as you sit on the bench, the clouds pass the sun and the sun's rays hit your cheeks. And now you're just overcome with peace.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really
intention, being more aware of your
life, each piece,
you in it, and how you, even the smallest things you do, can make a big difference, can have a huge impact. Right?
Absolutely.
Another thing that I learned too, you know, very late in life is how little things make big impacts. Just being,
you know,
to each other, just being nice to each other, holding doors for people, having nice manners, all stuff that I don't know, somehow, I don't know, those things now seem like a big deal to people. You hold a door and people are like, oh my God, thank you so much. Like, I mean, right? They don't even know how
sad. To, yes.
They're so used to probably people just letting the door slam in their face. Because
absolutely. And like, what kind of life is that to live? It's like we already got enough doors slammed in our face, right?
Right. Why have another one? Sure.
Yeah. You know, and it's actually really funny that you even mentioned that, because yesterday I was going to the grocery store and I saw an officer park in the fire lane, right? And I'm like, oh, really? I mean, you're gonna break all the rules, do whatever you want, you know? And so we go into the grocery store. I'm with my partner and we go into the grocery store and I'm like, I am gonna find that police officer. And I have a question that I have to ask him. And so I'm like, if I find him, I'm saying something. And I see from the corner of my eye the most beautiful smile that I have ever seen. It struck me from like aisles away, right? And in that moment, immediately, I'm like, oh, I can't get mad at someone like that. I'm like, I can't even. But I definitely went to go find them later on. I couldn't avoid it, right? I couldn't avoid it. I needed to go and find the officer and joke around, right? I was like, wow, really? Okay, sir. So you find that it's okay to park wherever you want, break the rules, you know? And he's like, well, and he turned and looked at me and gave me the most pleasant and mindful answer. He's like, well, actually, I park there because if I can park there, you guys won't get in trouble. And someone who really needs it now has a close parking spot. And so I share this simply because you're saying with opening the door and smiling, right? He was happy. I was happy. Mm-hmm. And it all started really with a smile.
Right. Interesting. I thought you were going to say something about taking grocery carts back.
Oh, no.
Get a post on in. I did a post on LinkedIn about that, about how, you know, if you really want to see if someone's a good leader, you don't have to them. Just take them to a parking lot. See if they take their shopping cart back.
Oh, where you know, that's funny because I do that. I am one of those people and I get outraged if I see a shopping cart right next or right outside of it. I'm like, really? That's interesting that you said that, because I do feel like that is.
That's all you would need to do. It's hiring a new leader. Go, hey, do you have time to run out of the store real quick? Or somehow to just observe them in the, because he's definitely looks good on the resume, right? Let's see how you act in the parking lot on a Friday night when you just put like 14 bags of groceries in your car. Are you taking that shopping cart back? Are you caring about others that are going to have to do that? Or is it just all about you? So to me, that's like the ultimate test of like leadership right there is just like, and that's someone posted in the comments. They said, not only do I take mine back, but I go find other stray ones and take them back too. I'm like, okay, well, that's next level. And that's great. That's great. You know, but like,
we need that in the world. We need it in the world. But the thing is, then that's where I think we also kind of come into this divide is you have so many people that are the leaders or want to do that. Then you get tired of the weight that you're carrying for ones that don't want to even carry their own. Like, what are those extra two steps that you have to take, right? And I think that's where we kind of always come into this friction, because you have some people that are just like, I really want to help. I want to help heal the planet. I want to help heal myself. I want to help heal other people. And then you have some that are just working on healing themselves, and they don't know how. And that's where kind of these tools that you talk about, the tools are important in understanding our awareness and recognizing, are we just helping ourselves, or is every action that we're taking, right? Somebody throws something out the window, You know, they're not thinking about, hey, that one piece of trash is probably not the only trash that you've thrown, right? How much collective trash have you thrown? What if all of the people in the world were like, you know what, it's just one piece of trash. How much does that accumulate?
Sure.
So it kind of comes into this awareness and mindfulness, like everything that we do is a work of art. And do you want your art to be garbage? Do you want it to be left for someone else to pick up? Or do you want to be the creator holding the paintbrush and saying, you know what? I'm going to skip over to the trash can and throw it away, or I'm going to sing and I'm going to make it beautiful in the process. And the more you put beauty in the process.
Right. I got a question.
The more unfolds.
What would you say, what advice would you give to a young person, let's say, who might be struggling with their creativity? Who maybe have parents that are like, you're going to be an engineer. You can't make money as a creative person, all, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like what kind of advice do you, you know, would you give that person, do you think? It's a tough question. So you have to think about it a little bit. I'll understand.
I think the best thing that I would be able to kind of share with someone who is in that coming of age and trying to really find it and harness it is to find a place wherever it is where you know that you can be alone without interruptions, right? I'm not saying locking yourself in a room. Maybe it's at a bookstore where you know your family isn't going to barge in, or somewhere, or maybe it's out by a park under a tree, right? Find a space that makes you feel safe where you can just be. And then get out a notebook and just write things that make you happy, right? And then you hold on to that and you keep it sacred. You don't have to go tell all the whole world what your interests are or what you love, right? Just to keep that, keep it close to you. And if someone does find out about it, that's okay. Don't let it bother you, right? That's your sacredness. That's your sacred space. These are your sacred dreams. And it's just so important to let, just like seeds on a plant are very vulnerable. When those seeds first happen, they're vulnerable. So it's your responsibility to keep them safe. And then as you grow, you have to keep watering it, right? You can't just put them there and then, you know, don't believe in them. You have to water them and watch them grow. And by the time you watch them grow, you understand that it's not just something that you like. It's something that you're made to do. I know that was a very long advice to give to someone who's younger, but it's find a sacred space. Write down your sacred dreams and keep them safe until you're confident to let them share.
Well, I think there's an energy that happens when you kind of write something down. It becomes real. Mm-hmm. You know, it's on, it's written from your head to your heart to your hand. You know, there's a mechanics that happen there, and it becomes, that's the seed, right? You just planted that seed.
Yeah.
Where if it just stays in your head, it's not real. It's not real until
it realizes
it, or it comes out on paper.
And it can't come from someone else either. That's why you have to find your sacred space, right? Yeah. Where there's no interruptions. There isn't anyone telling you right or wrong. You have to just say, like, what do I really want? And then when it comes onto the paper, like you said, that manifest, believe that that's meant for you because you wrote it down.
Yeah.
You asked yourself, what do I love? What do I want to do? You know, what is my purpose? And however you ask the question. But then you have to honor what the body answers.
The question that I love, which is the question that you, if you want to figure out what you should do with your life, ask yourself this. What would you do if failure was not an option? In other words, whatever you say you're going to do, you would not fail at. Whatever that answer is, that's what you should be doing. Because that's what stops both of us, is the fear of failure, right? So if you
In my case, Alan Watts, if money were no object, what would you do if money were no object? Don't be afraid about not making enough money, because you can make all the money in the world and not be happy. But if you're doing something that you love every day, then living on planet Earth is really fun.
Wow. There it is right there. That I wish that like everybody could understand that lesson right there. That's it. That's the lesson.
That's it. Because it is the lesson, because when you do that and you follow that, you will be protected. You will be helped along the way, right? It's like, we don't have to, like you were saying, you don't have to get the things first to believe. That's where faith comes in. You have to believe that if you're following your path or what you feel that you're meant to do, you are going to be supported along the way. Is it always going to be easy? Absolutely not. But if it was easy, then it wouldn't be as fun, because then everyone would be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's the carving that you have to like show your dedication to the practice and the belief of like, no, this is what I'm going to do. And then you have to keep showing up to do that.
Yeah.
I feel like it all grows, right? The seed gets bigger, you get more confident. And the magic becomes more profound.
Yeah. I had an interesting thing happen recently. I'm not sure. I'm still kind of processing what this all means and why it happened. But I was up in Maine at the end of August. And for some reason, I remember while I was up there, I remember reading this book in fifth grade. My teacher, Mr. Novak, gave the class this book to read.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because I was like surrounded by lighthouses or something, and I started thinking about seagulls. That's probably what happened. So this book, Jonathan Livingston Seagull, came into my head, right? I was like, oh, I remember reading that in fifth grade. Had no idea what the story was about, retained none of it, right? Just knew that he gave the book to the class. I remember the blue cover, the white dove on the front, or the seagull, sorry. And we had to read it. So I Googled, what is Jonathan Livingston Seagull about, right? I read it. I was like, oh my God. Basically, it's about a seagull that doesn't want to be a normal seagull. He wants to learn how to fly faster. He wants to learn how to fly higher. He wants to learn, like, what more can we do? What more are we capable
of? I love this.
This is crazy, right?
Yeah.
And it's like all the other seagulls are like, they fly over the fishing boats waiting to get their fish scraps. And he can see that happening. But he's like, no. I want to know how fast can I go? What's the top speed of a seagull? Like, and so he spends all of his days flying high. He wants to try to teach the flock. We can do more. We can be about more. And they're like, no, man. Mm-hmm. Ooh, and we just want to eat this fish and like kind of walk. Beach and bother tourists, right? We have no interest in this. And then they banish them. They banished them from the flock. And I just was like, now I don't want this to sound like arrogant, but I was like, oh my God, I'm that bird. I was that bird.
Yeah.
I've never been happy with normal or happy with mediocrity. No. And I just wanted to like test the boundaries. That's probably why I broke.
Because it's not creative. It's not creative. That's why. No. Because creativity is the birth of something new. Right? It's if you don't have a desire to bring newness to the world, you know?
What are you doing?
And there's really you know, it's not a like a right or wrong, but it's also like you're missing out on a lot.
Yeah.
Because the newness, especially if the newness is coming from you, it's like you get to envision the dream. Like what would light you up if it arrived, and then set out to do it.
And that's where I think, you know, trying new experiences come in that will feed your creativity. You know, if you you try things that you never tried before, you're opening up areas of your brain, opening up your, you know, things in your body that, you know, you haven't tried before. That's fertilizer for creativity. It puts you in mode of like, you know what? I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that, but that sounds like fun. Let's do it. Paddle boarding, or, you know, we have the paddle board and you try to like balance, like Most people see like, oh, I'm going to fall off of that. I don't want to get hurt. I'm going to fall. You know, and we
slowly,
what happens is we condition ourselves to just think the worst instead of like all the, you know, we think of all the reasons why it could go wrong. How about thinking of one reason why it might go right?
Absolutely. Well, it makes me think of like you're saying with the tasting new things, and the first thing that comes to mind is moving across country, right? Like that was a big, I mean, I've done it 3 times now, but the first time I did it, I was 24 years old. The only road trip I ever took was from like Florida up to Pennsylvania on like a weekend trip with a whole group of people for college. And then a little bit of time with my grandparents from New York to Pennsylvania. Other than that, I'd never done any road trips. And then here I am, like packing up everything I own and driving across the country. Living in Florida, most of the country is different than Florida, right? So I'm like going into caves for the first time. You know, I'm like, I'm seeing the leaves actually falling in transition. And like, there was just, you know, you're encountering different people. Oh, the stretch in Texas where there's no streetlights and hardly gas stations. Like in Florida, where I am, so much of that is there. So I stepped into the unknown simply because I have been watering this one particular seed for 20 years or close to. And it becomes a matter of I either do it. Not to sound intense, but I either do it or I die doing it, right? Like if I'm in it, I gotta be in it. And if I'm uncomfortable, then what happens, right? Do I wither or do I keep going? I went into a complete different environment multiple times, and every single day of my life, I was doing something that I'd never done before. You know, it was out of survival in a sense, but then that survival, you kind of snap out of it because you realize, wow, I've survived so much, I become more resilient.
Sure, sure. Right, right. I was just having a conversation with a student today. We were talking about trees, and I said, do you know why trees get stronger? During hurricanes.
They deal with all the winds and stuff. They deal with the winds and the storms.
Yeah. Not when they're standing still. When they're standing still, nothing's happening. But when those storms happen and they're grabbing into the ground to try to like, that's how they actually get stronger. And they were kind of like surprised to learn that. And that's to your point, you know?
Yeah. You know, that's so interesting that and you saying it in that way too, because if you even think of like the shapes, I love trees and like I look at trees and I admire them so much. Like you want to hug them, right? Like you're so beautiful. I love you. Mm-hmm. But you know, when you see a tree, like you're saying, even with the storms, not only does it grow stronger, but personally, I think it grows more beautiful because it looks like a dancer. Like it like moves in different ways where you're just like, you can see, they look like they're dancing. Mm-hmm. And then it comes into like, can life just be a dance? You know, can it just be a dance and we just learn one step at a time? And if we fall, like, okay, we're just going to get up and do it again, right? That's the song, life's a dance. You know, you learn as you go. Sometimes you lead, sometimes you follow.
I think that's a perfect place to end. I don't want to wreck that with adding more onto that. That's perfect. That's awesome. Gabrielle, I really appreciate you doing this. This was a great conversation. I knew it would be. A lot of stuff in there. A lot of stuff.
No.
I think I definitely admire your adventureness. Your adventurousness. Like, what's that word? I don't know what that word. Adventureness? I guess that's the word.
Dangerous. I think it's dangerous.
Your willingness to just throw yourself into situations and say, I'll figure it out. Like I'm not sure I'm at that level. I may want to be at that level, but and I aspire to be at that level, but you're at that level. And that's I admire and respect that. Because I think that's
I appreciate that.
That's a cool way to live. And I know that you're
it's fun.
Yeah. You're surviving and you're having fun, happy. I know that. So you got to be doing something, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yes.
Be well, keep doing your thing, and stay curious. All right?
Thank you.
Take care.
All right, Ad Yakkers. Hope you enjoyed it.
because we have many more great conversations planned and guests lined up ready to yak it up. Ad Yak is sponsored and produced by ASR Media. Theme song was written and performed by Dan Ross. Ad Yak is the official podcast of the AAF Greater Lehigh Valley Ad Club. Stay hungry, stay humble. Till next time.
This episode of Ad Yak is rated O for, oh man, that was good.